Our second reading this morning comes from John 17. Listen to what God is saying to the church this day. I have made your name known to those whom you gave me from the world. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have kept your word. Now they know that everything that you have given is from you. For the words that you gave to me, I have given to them, and they have received them, and know in truth that I came from you, and they have believed that you sent me. I'm asking on their behalf. I'm not asking on behalf of the world, but on behalf of those whom you gave me, because they are yours. All mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I have been glorified in them. And now I am no longer in the world, but they are in the world, and I am coming to you. Holy Father, protect them in your name that you have given me, so that they may be one as we are one. While I was with them, I protected them in your name that you have given me. I guarded them, and not one of them was lost, except the one destined to be lost, so that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you, and I speak these things in the world, so that they may have my joy made complete in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but I ask you to protect them from the evil one. They do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, so that they also may be sanctified in truth. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
12 dozen chicks for $1. This was all 7-year-old Maria needed to hear that day at the Easter street fair. She threw down her big money and paraded her crate full of chicks into the living room of her family's tiny New York City apartment. They were her pets now, her babies, the whole dozen. She named them Pew Pew and Sunshine and Elvis and Little Ricky. She had them exercise each day up and down the hallway. She trained them to sit, and she sang them to sleep in their cardboard bed in the bathtub. As these city chicks grew into hefty chickens and roosters, they began taking over the entire apartment. Her mama was ready to cut one of their heads off for dinner each day, and her papa couldn't take it anymore. He told Maria that it was time for the pets to go. He said he had a farmer friend who would take good care of them. So, with a heavy heart, she said goodbye to her babes and prayed that they would enjoy their new life on the farm somewhere. Well, a few weeks later, she stopped into the bodega market on her way back from school, when she heard some commotion in the back room. Curious, she followed the noise and found herself amongst a group of men in suits shouting loudly. They were standing in a circle and holding up wads of cash. Two roosters fought in the center. One was big and aggressive. The other was trembling and bleeding all over. Maria was horrified. A mother knows her own. That trembling rooster was her Pew Pew. Without a second thought, She pushed through the crowd, grabbed Biu Biu, and flew out of that bodega, leaving a trail of angry shouting behind her. When she got back up to the apartment, she spent hours singing familiar lullabies to calm his shaking and applying handfuls of Vicks vapor rub to his wounds. Now, I have heard my mother tell this story about herself many times before. But the question that I'm always left asking is, weren't you afraid? You were 7, standing in this room full of powerful strangers, and you jumped into the center of the ring to rescue a rooster. Mom always laughs and says, he was mine, and he needed my help. I guess in that moment, I just felt fearless. I wonder if Jesus ever felt truly afraid. After all, he spent his entire life running towards danger, jumping into the ring, if you will, again and again and again, giving everything he could to those most in need. We all know that he had quite a reputation for ruffling feathers, for going against the grain, for upsetting countless religious leaders and practitioners of the day. Life was surely hard enough for any Jewish person living under Roman rule, let alone one with a divine fire in his belly to break down systems of oppression and to dare folks to imagine a different way of living and loving. No matter how Jesus was feeling deep inside, on the outside, he modeled a ministry of fearlessness. And his disciples faithfully followed him into the most unexpected, vulnerable spaces. In this morning's text, we find Jesus in an especially vulnerable state, in his final moments before his arrest and later his execution. Tucked away in an upper room, he breaks bread with his friends, shares words of blessing, charges them to carry on. And then he looks up to heaven and prays to God. Holy Father, protect them in your name that you have given me, he says. In this moment in John's gospel, Jesus does not express being afraid of death at all. He doesn't ask for this cup to pass over. He doesn't beg for his fate to change. He accepts what must come, and his concern rests solely on protection for his disciples. In a time of such utter chaos, Jesus could pray for his friends to find a safe hiding space or to retire their efforts. Instead, he asks them to get into the ring and to continue his holy work with even greater intensity. Give, unite, speak truth, he says in his prayer, and do this with a fearless spirit for generations to come. What does it mean to fearlessly give? As Christ's disciples today, we know what it is like to live in a society dictated by fear. The news headlines, the vicious tweets, the ICE raids, the deals broken, the pervasive rhetoric of us versus them, all this blaming and shaming. Fear has this capacity to be a catalyst for isolation and individualism. It dismantles our human connection. It clenches up our fists. It turns our backs towards one another. Jesus calls us to combat fear with increased generosity and authentic engagement, no matter the circumstance, no matter the cost. He prays, the words that you gave to me, I have given to them. Protect them. As you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them. Anne Frank and her family were forced to go into hiding in April of 1942. They lived in a tiny secret annex in Amsterdam for nearly 2 years, along with four other people. They couldn't go outside. They couldn't look out a window. They couldn't speak for much of the day. Fear was the oxygen they breathed. At any moment, they could be caught, taken away, and killed, simply for being Jewish. The Frank family lived in a world that had allowed fear and frustration to fester so much so that groups of people were now being considered dangerous to society. Jews, gypsies, the differently abled, LGBTQ folks were all being taken away by the millions and murdered in death camps across Europe. For the past 3 months, I've had the privilege to journey in Anne Frank's mother Edith's shoes by way of the Asheville Community Theater. Some of you got the chance to experience the show, and I'm so grateful that you were able to come. Becoming Edith meant learning about her life, entering into her story, and embodying her pain and her resilience. Edith was someone who gave of herself in profound ways. Although she privately wrestled with fear and depression, she carried on her role as mother. She was strict and protective, and often clashed with her daughter Anne. She was also tender and sensitive, and believed in the power of human touch to comfort the soul. After they were discovered and sent to concentration camps, Edith gave up her shoes in hopes to get bread for her daughters. And any food that she received from then on, she tucked away for them, even long after they had been separated. In January 1945, Edith died of starvation in Auschwitz. Her story is heart-wrenching. But her heart has much to teach us about what it means to live as fearless people of faith, to give that much, to love that much, to embody our role as disciples that much, and no matter what. What does it mean to fearlessly unite? Jesus says, protect them in your name that you have given me so that they may be one as we are one. When we think about the word protection, we might imagine building up walls or drawing lines in the sand, holding up our shields. How interesting that Jesus asks God to protect his disciples so that they may be more unified. One with one another, and one with Christ. Fostering equitable community is no easy task, we know that. After all, we are products of a divided world. We're motivated by fear, where prejudice still dominates, where people are motivated by jealousy and greed. It's hard to imagine that we can ever find a way to really live as one. In Harper Lee's classic novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, Scout has decided that she does not want to return to school. Today was her first day ever, and it didn't go well. First of all, they made her wear a dress. Second, the teacher reprimanded her, and third, she got into a big fight in the playground. Her father, Atticus, walks onto the porch to sit beside her. He holds her close and says with a gentle smile, if you can learn a simple trick, Scout, you'll get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. until you climb inside of his skin and walk around in it. Jesus did just that. God looked out at the world and all its brokenness, and instead of turning away, God chose to get into the ring like never before, to climb into human skin and walk beside us. God came to empathize and engage and empower, to understand, to upset, and to unify. Bishop Thomas Brendenthal writes that when Jesus walked among us, he recognized the world as something good, and he called the world back to its true nature as an interconnected whole. And why not? This is what the word world means: wholeness, oneness. As Jesus prays for his disciples in the upper room on that Passover night, he asks for them to remember the purpose of his incarnation. He wants them and us to see this world through his eyes, as an interconnected body created as one. What does it mean to fearlessly speak truth? These days, it can be hard to decipher fact from fiction. We receive information from within our own echo chambers. We listen to people who think like us and speak like us and look like us. It seems that every group abides by its own version of the truth. Sanctify them in truth, Jesus says. Your word is truth. Sanctify, in this case, means to set ourselves apart. And truth refers to what Christ taught us through his life and ministry. That night, Jesus prays for us to set ourselves apart from the rhetoric that seeks to divide and scapegoat. Christ invites us to be courageous enough to speak radical truth to power, God's truth, for all the world to hear. I remember my first day sitting in Reverend Dr. James Cone's systematic theology class. It was just the beginning of seminary. I was excited and very naive. Dr. Cone, who sadly passed away just 2 weeks ago, is known as the father of Black liberation theology. He preached with fire that God is on the side of the marginalized, not on the side of those who oppress. He was a true giant in his field and also a kind-hearted soul. He spoke hard truth to his students each day while slamming on the podium and sweating through his clothes. He tore open our faith and forced us to see Christ anew. "White people will never understand suffering," he said. "They will never understand God. They will never be Christians until they listen and recognize the truth when it is spoken by the oppressed." Truth, he said, is divine action entering our lives and creating the human action of liberation. Here at Grace Covenant, the Racial Justice Book Club had the chance to read his most recent book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, in which Cone makes a striking connection between the cross where Jesus' body was publicly crucified and the lynching tree where Black bodies across America and here in Buncombe County were murdered for all the world to see. In Dr. Cone's book, he boldly critiques Christians for our participation in white supremacy throughout the generations. His fury pours out of each page. But what is most stirring, perhaps, is how he concludes his book. with unexpected grace. He writes, "All the hatred we have expressed toward one another in America cannot destroy the profound mutual love that flows deeply between us. No gulf between blacks and whites is too great to overcome, for our beauty is more enduring than our brutality. What God has joined together, no one can tear apart." Dr. Cone speaks the sort of truth that Jesus challenges us to share, even in the midst of a tumultuous history and present, even in the midst of anger and terror, we can still believe that generous healing and radical unity are always possible. Friends, we don't know if Jesus was ever truly afraid, but we do know that he wanted to protect those he loved. He uses his final moments with his disciples to pray for them, for their ministry, for their calling to engage in the world. And still today, God prays for us. There is nothing hypothetical about following Christ. This is a daring, dangerous mission. It is never finished, and we can't do it alone. We need each other. Together, we go to the hardest places, down the paths least traveled, towards the most vulnerable among us, seeking difficult and divine truths, giving fully, no matter the cost. When we do this, we embody Christ here and now. We trust in his prayer. We heed his call to fearlessly give, fearlessly unite, fearlessly speak truth. Know who you are and whose you are. Jump into the ring and don't be afraid.